Welcome to Silence the Mind Cluck. I'm your host, Maria T. Finch, and I'm super glad that you're here. Get ready to quiet that mind and reap the rewards. Welcome, everyone. Good morning. I hope that your day and week are getting off to a great start. I'm Maria Finch. I'm an inner intelligence coach, and I am thrilled today to have Alexandra with me here. Alexandra, welcome.
Thank you, Maria. Thank you for having me. It's such a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, so glad to have you. So to start out with, please tell us a bit about yourself for our audience.
My name is Alexandra Docheva. I am originally Bulgarian. I came to the States in 2000 to earn my doctoral degree in classical violin. And then in 2008, I switched to nursing. I put myself through nursing school. I became a nurse in 2011. Then I became a real estate investor in 2014. And recently, a confidence coach and a book author.
Wow. Okay. That is quite a journey. So on this podcast, we're focused on mind cluck. So let's go to a time in your life when you were really dealing with a lot of mind cluck. Tell us a little bit about that time.
Of course, there have been many, many times.
Yeah, well, for all of us.
Mind garbage, yes. But the absolute worst, Maria, was 2008. Okay. I was 32 and I had just earned my doctoral degree the year prior, 2007. Wow. And as orchestras started bankrupting left and right because of the financial crisis between 2006 and 2008, right. I had to face the fact that I was not going to survive as a musician because I wasn't at the level of Yo-Yo Ma or Gil Shaham or, you know, any of these amazing string musicians. Uh-huh. And it was very scary because I knew nothing but music. I had been a musician for 26 years and very limited perspective on the rest of the world, super big amount of self-doubt, guilt for not having learned anything else for the 26 years, but I was just so dedicated all this time that I firmly believed I was doing the right thing for myself. Mm-hmm. And I realized that was anything but the right thing, and I had dug myself into a bad hole. And on top of that, I had been already struggling with huge self-confidence issues for almost 20 years. And that was the worst part, 2008, 32, early midlife crisis. Like, what are you doing? You haven't accomplished anything. And with, in spite of all of your ambitions and practicing 7 to 9 hours a day for so many years.
Goodness. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. I can't even imagine. So what was sort of the first thing you did to recognize, like, okay, I've got to change what my mind is telling me? Because I can imagine being in that position, like, your mind can really beat you up, and beating yourself up doesn't help you advance. So what was sort of the first step for you in figuring out, like, how am I going to shift how I'm thinking?
Yeah. Just to let you know, there are jets flying.
We're just not going to control that. We're not going to worry about it for our audience. Sometimes there's going to be outside sound. Yeah. This is, you know, that's life. We just move on.
So what I did for the mind cluck part, I had to, a reality hit me on the head really bad because I was 32. I had nothing to show for it. And
I feel like that's being too hard on yourself. I'm sure you are an amazing musician.
No. It was a very real feeling and it was completely in touch with reality. So when you come to touch with reality so hard, that's rock bottom. And I became very scared of poverty because I grew up in a family of musicians. We were never rich. And there were many times when my parents struggled financially, especially when communism fell in Bulgaria in 1989. Uh-huh. There were two horrible winters in the 90s, not next to each other, but apart. And I had seen my parents struggle for money. And now that I was actually losing ground as a musician, I became even more scared of poverty at that point. And that's what made me very focused. I realized subconsciously, though, years later, I figured what actually had happened, but I had apparently made my anxiety turn itself into a motivating factor and put myself through nursing school, replaced the violin practice of 9 hours daily with reading the textbooks 9 hours daily. And I've told other podcast hosts I was reading all the books cover to cover before the semester started because I had no science basis, absolutely no scientific vocabulary, let alone in English.
Oh my goodness. So
that's what made it happen.
And so how did you get yourself to do that? Like, I understand that your fear was motivating, but for someone who's listening and who might be in a similar position and thinking, oh my gosh, how am I going to do this? Was there anything that helped you change your mindset so that you're like, okay, I'm just going to be really determined? Or how did that happen for you?
I got sick of my own bullshit, Maria. I got sick of my own detrimental mindset, and I just said, there is no way that I can't reverse this, because if I don't reverse this, I'm going nowhere.
Wow.
Because I'm kicking my own butt, right?
And yeah.
It did it. It took a while. It's not a magic transformation, but it happens over the course of several years when you adopt different working habits. Because as a simple example, when I was an orchestra musician, you don't communicate with people too much while you rehearse during sure. orchestra rehearsal or concert, sure. just the conductor and, you know, the concert master. Yeah. But
right.
in the medical profession, in college, back to college after 11 years of music college, then I had to go to nursing school, completely different environment. Yeah. And I had to learn to communicate with people. Uh-huh. I had to learn to be more patient with people and actually express my thought in a way that people would understand and cooperate. That was a tremendous challenge for me for a very long time. So, but again, I kept saying, no, no, you're going to be poor. You're going to do what you're going to do because you have a great brain and photographic memory. You can learn anything you want. And really, I aced all the exams. That was not the problem. But the discipline was not the problem. But the actual transformation into a new reality, into the real, real world from the artist's world was, it was interesting. But it was very inspiring because as I thought, Maria, that I was very old to switch careers, uh-huh. it turned out there were people in their 40s and 50s that were going to nursing school with me.
Oh,
and
yeah.
they had been in their careers for even longer. But see, my problem was that I had started at age 6. And when you are in Eastern Europe in a family of musicians, you kind of start professionally. There is no back and forth. Do you want, do you not want? No, you do it. So you treat it as a profession for 20 years, 25, 26 years. And at 32, you've practiced for 26 years. And then it's a lot. What is like most people after 26 years of practicing something, they think of retirement, not of starting a job.
Wow.
So my brain was already way ahead into that profession. So in a way, I was maybe 50 years old. In the profession that most people would be in there, but they started them at age 20, 22, if that makes sense.
Yes. Yeah, that does make sense. I understand what you're saying. So did you start to do any kind of exercises to help manage what your mind was telling you, or what was your approach? I mean, other than just like, it sounds like you have tremendous discipline, which I know from having musicians in my family, it takes tremendous discipline to be a good musician. So for someone else who's in this position and thinking, okay, I've got to start over, what suggestions do you have for them?
So in my case, it was the mind clock was conquered by the clock, the clock and the clock, because the textbooks were the like form of a meditation, because I had to catch up so much with knowledge, and the textbooks were between 1,000 and 1,200 pages.
Uh-huh.
And my classmates didn't even bother to open these textbooks. Okay, but I couldn't afford the luxury of being mediocre because I really wanted to succeed as a nurse.
Yeah.
And so that was my focusing point for my mind. Like there was no going back, and I have to utilize every single of my time if I want to make it through these exams.
Right.
And then once I started the job, which was of course very stressful for the first, people say, oh, 5 years. No, I'm a slow learner. For me, it was like the first 9 years. It was very stressful as a nurse. So then I integrated meditation, breathing exercises, and of course, I was a martial artist very intensely for 12 years, and then I became a fitness freak. So that discharge of negative energy was extremely helpful and still is, of course, in maintaining focus and perseverance and resilience and discipline.
Sure. So tell us about your meditation practice. How did you get started in that, and what led you to that in the first place?
I learned from several great books that because the mind's job is to think, you have to help your mind clear itself.
Yes.
And meditation, that's exactly what it does. Some people like to pray. I prefer meditation because with prayer, you're still listening to your own voice, even when you pray in silence. Mm-hmm. Whereas with meditation, I came to the realization you listen to the world around you. And that's what ultimately makes you understand the world and helps you make the world cooperate with you by understanding it in the first place. So you first have to listen to the world around you. Then you have to let your voice out there for everybody else to listen, because that's how it works with everything. If you think about it, you're new to the job, you're new to the world. First, listen to what's going on around you and orient yourself.
That's true. That's true.
With the mind, you know, the beginner people who meditate, when they give up, they say, well, I can't really focus that way. So, well, that's the point. You already missed it, right? The mind revolts. You try to control it by focusing on your breathing or any beautiful image that you create in front of yourself, or imagine you're in whatever place that calms you down. But the mind still wants to throw these things at you. And it's usually the garbage of the day that you are trying to eradicate in the first place.
Right.
But the gentle redirection of the mind in meditation is what really captured my attention, because it's a very nice way to tell your mind, okay, you're thinking. And then just acknowledge that without beating yourself up over it, and just keep breathing. Okay. And after 2, 3, 4 months, if you persevere through the first 3 to 6 months, you will be able to focus more effectively and for longer periods of time and quicker as you start your session. And then you really get to appreciate how well the mind operates for the rest of the day if you give it a chance to actually breathe and not even hear its own thoughts.
Yeah.
It's not an easy thing. It's not an easy thing, but so beneficial.
So you were doing completely silent meditation, not guided meditations.
Yeah, I tried all of them. And to me, silent is the best, because when you're a nurse and work in a nursing environment like a hospital or even in home care like I'm right now, you hear lots of noises and you really want to eliminate everything possible. Now, I listen to classical music every day, but that is not part of my meditation.
Uh-huh.
I prefer silence. Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Because I have a very talkative mind.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. So I've done a variety of meditation, and what I find with silent meditation is I actually can just go to like this sort of Zen state where I'm just kind of suspended in a very peaceful place. Is that what happens for you?
That's what happens. And it's very important to understand that silent meditation is not necessarily that you're in the quietest possible environment, because not everybody can find the quietest place to do silent meditation. And then they use this as an excuse to not meditate. Your silent meditation is at the actual environment where you live. Everything around you, if you don't, deliberately put music on. So we don't put music on or anybody talking at us, but what happens in the neighborhood, a car drives by, an airplane like today, that is part of your silent meditation, because your immediate environment is an integral part of you at this point. Mm-hmm. So within that, you do silent meditation and you teach your mind gradually to ignore these things and phase them away. And then you really find the silence within the noise.
Yeah, yeah,
and
I like that.
That's when you learn with practice to apply this exact state of mind of conscious awareness, but not being asleep, into every activity of your day throughout your day, even in the most stressful moments with clients, colleagues, loved ones, anybody. If you can go through situations like this in the mindset of meditation, that's a real victory.
Yeah, wow. Absolutely. Absolutely. I know that for myself, in training myself to meditate silently, it's so, say that I'm in a silent meditation and I hear the hum of my refrigerator. And so I'll be like, okay, I hear the hum of my refrigerator. And then it's like, okay, let it go.
Exactly.
And then the hum of the refrigerator actually goes away. Has that been your experience?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
And so how do you capture that depth of peace from silent meditation when you're in a stressful situation with, you know, one of your nursing clients or something like that? What is it? Do you have a process in order to get there, or how do you do that?
You already elaborated on the process when you mentioned your fridge.
Yeah.
So you hear your fridge when you meditate and you acknowledge, okay, that's my fridge. That's fine.
Yeah.
So you're in a stressful situation with a client or a patient and you acknowledge immediately, this is a stressful, unusual situation.
Okay.
We're going to work through this together. You relax your mind. You adopt a beginner's mindset, and then you work through the stressful situation with the patient to the best interest of the patient and their safety, but their desires and decisions that you have to respect, even if they're completely opposite of yours. And you let go of that type of frustration immediately in the situation to really help the person that you're there supposed to help.
Right, right.
You're there to help. Yes, I'm sorry.
Yeah. So the act of letting go. Correct. It's like letting go of, so I think of it as it's letting go of the illusion of control. Because I think control is an illusion to begin with.
It depends. So if you let go of the things that you can't control for real, then you can prioritize even better on the things that you can actually control at the moment.
That absolutely makes sense. Yeah. And so what other practices do you utilize now when you have Mind Clock come up? Which, you know, everybody has Mind Clock every day. So it's like, what are your go-tos?
Right. So depends on the situation. Truly, if I have to muster an intricate financial scheme for my real estate businesses, because I manage my own real estate businesses, I have three of them in addition to my nursing job. Wow. I love separating my mind in different spheres of ability to manage things. Yeah. I'm one of those people who thinks that it's perfectly fine to have a job, but not have to rely on the job. When you have three other thriving businesses, but it's nice to be able to manage everything because you never know what life is going to serve you. And if I feel that I kind of get frustrated at a job, that's when I know that I need to continue with the job so I can continue managing my stress, because clearly I'm not mastered it yet. If there is a moment that I'm like, oh, you know what, I could have managed this better. So I'm not ready to quit the job yet. It's not for financial reasons. It's for mindset reasons.
Wow. Okay.
Right. So when you say, depending on the situation, so a complex financial scheme, if I have to muster a plan for the next 2 years with the businesses, I love to listen to Baroque music because somehow this music really organizes my brain in ways that they can separate numbers very well and integrate numbers when needed. It's very hard to explain, but I give an example in my book that way, because you have a mechanic, for example, in their shop. And they can explain to you crazy things about any car model they have dealt with for 30 years. And they integrate information and separate it a similar way. It's just not with Baroque music and finances. It's with their cars and whatever tools they use to fix things around the car. So Baroque music helps me in this particular situation. Other types of music help me for different situations.
That's okay. So I totally relate to that. My music that organizes my brain is classical guitar. Mm. And I think it's because when I was in my mother's womb, she was a very serious classical guitar musician. And so that's what I came into being listening to. So not only listening, but feeling the vibrations, if you think of a guitar held against a womb. So anytime I need to concentrate, I put on classical guitar music and my brain locks on.
Do you play the guitar, Maria?
I don't. I wish I did. Yeah. 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 But so for anybody listening, you might find that music can be very powerful that way. And everybody's unique for the kind of music that will relate, you know, best for them. But play around with music if you haven't yet tried that, if you need to focus. Because I really believe in the power of music. I think music is amazing. And music is really energy. So it's like giving you a certain amount of energy that can help you lock on to things in your brain. That's right. Great. Yeah. All right. What else? What are other techniques that you use?
What are techniques? Well, I have also integrated a lot of my martial arts knowledge into everything I do, as far as discipline and, like I said, kicking my butt if I feel that I get just softened, lazy mindset and indolence of mind. That happens every day. You have to admit when you're getting into a lazy mind frame or complacency. And you have to awaken from that as soon as possible. Just like when you meditate, if you start falling asleep, you have to carefully pull yourself out of the, because that's the other thing. The one thing is the mind clutter that attacks you from all directions and you have to relax from it. But then when you shift into the other pendulum, right? So when you try to fall asleep during meditation, you have to pull yourself out of that too. Yeah. So with indolence of mind and complacency, is the exact same principle. So I always see my martial arts master, my karate master, Grandmaster Hanshi Greg Tierney, who is currently in his 80s, and we have an excellent friendly relationship. He's in upstate New York. We've seen each other very few times since my boyfriend and I moved to Arizona in 2014, but he's been a great influence, as has been his wife, Judy Mudafre Tierney, also Hanshi. Both of them are 10-degree black belt in Shorin Goju Karate.
Wow.
But it's this technique, his approach to challenges and applying the dojo in real life, which is the real dojo. And some people can't make that transition really, but if you are an honest martial artist, you know that your real life, the real crappy situations in life, those are the real dojos every day. And that's when I just imagine his voice and what everything I learned in karate, and I treat my fitness sessions and sometimes my work shifts as dojo trainings, because it can be that bad and that hard to make yourself do the right thing when nobody's watching, and especially when you don't feel like it.
So
that's not a technique that I have to say I have to use quite frequently, but I use it. I don't step away from it. I don't let myself slide into previous patterns of mediocrity, which I did a lot when I was a musician, just kidding myself that if I practiced so many hours a day, I would still get better if I didn't focus the proper way. So I don't do this anymore. But in the last 15 years, it's been much better. But to get there was a challenge.
So if you were to share with our audience, so say that someone's listening to us and thinking like, gosh, well, I haven't done martial arts and I'm not that into music, and I tried meditation and I couldn't do it. What would you suggest? Do you have another suggestion or a way to get them started on a path to ease their mind cluck?
One evening when I was working night shifts as an orthopedic trauma nurse in one of the hospitals, we had an IV team, intravenous team. So that person or people would come if we had patients with veins so hard that we couldn't draw blood from them. And one night I called the vocera, which was a thing that you could, like a walkie-talkie, communicate with other people. So I chose Bob such and such. Hey, Bob, this is Alexandra. I have a patient that I can't draw blood for the life of me. Can you please, you know, come help? So I called him again, and he had changed his voicemail on the vocera device, which said, hi, this is Bob. You've reached Bob. I am by myself tonight. Please try harder.
Wow.
So I hope that answered the question.
So you're saying just please try harder.
Or find something else, but don't give up on yourself. Don't give up on yourself. Don't use excuses. Try something else. Try what you haven't succeeded. Try it again. Try it a couple more times. Give it some more time. Ask yourself the question, did I really try it, or just, you know, skim through it, blaze through it, and decided that I didn't have the time and was actually could do it, but chose not to. Be honest with yourself.
I think, being honest with yourself is really important. And I think sometimes that's also like just acknowledging like, okay, I'm in a hard time. I'm in a bad time. And I can call a spade and say, okay, this is not, you know, this sucks. And then you can say, okay, so what are the steps that I can take to start to get myself out of it? Because most often bad times are made much worse by mind cluck. So if you're able to start to conquer the mind cluck and tone that down and be your own cheerleader and be like, yeah, you can do this and you will do this. And I think it can help to like remember times in the past when you've been successful at pulling yourself up by your bootstraps in whatever situation you were in, and you can use that knowledge to carry you forward in the next hard time you have.
Yeah, I mean, you must have at some point, you must adopt the integrity to recognize the quality of your thoughts, what is pulling you down and what's elevating you. And you must be your own cheerleader in recognizing, okay, so this thought was positive, and positive doesn't necessarily mean cheerful thought.
Right.
Positive in ways that prompt you to some productive action that promotes your personal growth. Thoughts that do nothing for your personal growth need to go away.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, I think that is a perfect place for us to wrap up. I think that's a very good point. Anything else you'd like to say to our audience before we sign off?
Don't deprive yourself of opportunities just because they seem hard. Anything that you most likely want, and that's a cliched phrase already, is most likely outside of your zone of fear, outside of your comfort zone. Where your fear is, that's where your dreams are, right? So yeah. You can't self-limit, because life is astoundingly short, and it's very, very sad to waste time. Time is our most valuable asset. That's the only thing that if you lose, you can never get back. Even some parts of your health you can get back, but your time, never, ever. And please don't waste it, and just get to work.
Okay. All right. Well, Alexandra, thank you so much for being on the show today.
It was a pleasure, Maria. Thank you very much for having me.
All right. You're welcome. Well, to our audience, hope you enjoyed this, and we'll catch you next time. Bye. Thanks for listening. If you found this content helpful, please like, comment, and share across your social media. Are you sick of Mind Clock clocking up your days? Book a free initial consult with me at mindclock.com and let's silence it. Thanks and have a great week.